God of hope and creation, even on this snowy April morning, we give you thanks for the abundance of our lives, for enough food to eat, for warm shelter to sleep, for meaningful work to do, and for the love of family and friends. But we know we cannot be grateful for the ways you provide without remembering those in need. We are mindful of the too many people in this state whose shelters are inadequate or have no shelter at all. We remember those who are hungry or food insecure, those who wonder how to pay their rent and other bills, and those who feel alone, invisible, and voiceless. Bring us to their side, O God, that we may be your hands and feet, reaching out to all those who need our help. We recognize we are uniquely positioned to speak on behalf of those who are the most vulnerable and marginalized among us. And we thank you for the privilege of being in this space, where we can give voice to those who are often silenced and unheard. Help us to make our state of Minnesota an even better place for all its residents, and grant us wisdom and discernment, courage and compassion, and send to us a spirit of collaboration in our work, so that through our work we may warm this great state, uniting us as one human race to love one another as you have called us to do. We pray this with hope in our hearts and strength in our hands, in the name of the one whose grace knows no bounds and whose love has no end. Amen.
Liberty and justice.
The secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J., Peterson B., Pratt, Reinert, Rust, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move now to the second order of business, executive and official communications. Please make note of that. The third order of business, messages from the House. The secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 504 and 1378. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
The fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The bills will be referred as indicated and given their first reading. The fifth order of business, report of committee. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the report pertaining to appointments.
All those on that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the committee report pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. We move now to the seventh order of business. The House bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. The eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills will be referred as indicated and given their first reading. The ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. These are authors of motions that will be adopted as one motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, members, the Finance Committee needs to meet. They have one bill that they would like to set up and send up to the floor and have us adopt the committee report today. So I would move a recess of the Senate until the Finance Committee concludes their work today. I don't expect it to be a long time. So, Madam President, I move a recess of the Senate.
Madam President.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. And if I could ask Majority Leader Senator Bach, I know you may not know precisely what the recess may be. I understand there are some family members who are here with the one bill that we have, Senator Fischbach's bill, that honors a police officer. I think there are some family members here, and I just wanted to know if there was something we could give them in terms of expectation of when we would be back in session to take up that bill.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Hamm, my intent was when we get back here, we would call the Senate to order and then recess to be able to recognize the family members that are here. That's the conversation I had with Senator Fischbach. We could probably do it now, except I don't see Senator Fischbach on the floor.
She's here.
Senator, we can certainly do it now. I expect the family members will probably want to stay and watch the bill be debated. But Senator Fischbach, I guess I would yield to Senator Fischbach. If she'd like to do it after we recess now, that's fine with me. Or we could do it when we come back right before we take the bill up. Senator Fischbach?
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I believe what Senator Hamm was just trying to get a timeline, but if it would be appropriate, I would be happy to announce or introduce the family members, the folks from Cold Spring that are here.
Madam President, I renew my motion that the Senate recess until the Finance Committee conclude their business today, and once we vote on that motion, I would yield to Senator Fischbach.
All those in favor of the recess motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate is in recess. Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, when we do come back, we will be discussing and voting on a bill, Senate File 76, that would name a portion of Highway.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. All opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Sergeant-at-Arms will bring in the absent members. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list is on your desk. There are two of them.
Number five on general orders, Senate File 76, Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I am honored to carry Senate File 76. It's a simple bill that would name a portion of State Highway 23 after fallen officer Tom Decker. Most of us remember when we heard the shocking news of the Cold Spring Richmond officer Tom Decker's death. The quiet and security of the small town of Cold Spring was shattered. Officer Decker was making a simple welfare check, and when he arrived at the call, he was ambushed, shot, and killed. This kind of tragedy shakes us all to the core. It destroys our sense of right and our sense of security. This tragedy shook the community. The community not only lost an officer in the line of duty, the community lost a friend, the community lost an officer that had grown up there. The community lost a graduate of Ricori High School. And his family lost a father, a husband, a brother, and a son. Officer Decker leaves behind a wife, four children, his siblings, and his parents. All of us lost a dedicated police officer. Officer Decker faithfully served the community. He was a member of a special group that is dedicated to protect and serve. The grief reminds us that the law enforcement is not just another job and deserves the undying respect of every person who enjoys the peace and safety of that law enforcement provides. That is why we are here today. The cities of Cold Spring and Richmond approached Representative Howe and myself shortly after Officer Decker's funeral and asked us to carry the legislation to name a portion of Highway 23 in honor of Officer Decker. I am honored to carry this legislation. It is my privilege. This is a small thing that we can do to honor this man who gave his life in his dedication to protect and serve. This small memorial will serve to remind us all and all generations to come that Officer Tom Decker protected and served the communities of Cold Spring and Richmond and in that service gave the ultimate sacrifice of his life. And I ask for your support on Senate File 76.
Is there any discussion? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I just wanted to thank Senator Fischbach for carrying this bill. The Senate Transportation Committee had the honor of hearing the bill and having the members of the leaders of the community of Cold Spring and Officer Decker's family there with us that day. It was a difficult and emotional hearing, but I just want to again extend my public commendation to the family of Officer Decker, to that community, for rallying around and holding that family in its heart, and to recognize Officer Decker having made the ultimate sacrifice for our state and for the people of his community. He was beloved. This is the least we can do to remember him and honor his name and his contribution to our state.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give the bill, Senate File 76, its third reading.
Senate File Number 76, a bill for an act relating to transportation, highways, designating a segment of marked Trunk Highway 23 as Officer Tom Decker Memorial Highway.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, The secretary will close the roll. There being 61 in favor and 0 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 4 on general orders, House File 164, Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I have Senate File 118. Members, I'm happy to bring this to the floor today. Members, the bill does two things. It extends the current moratorium from August 1st, 2014 until December 1st, 2020. This moratorium applies to the Greater Twin Cities metro area, as well as three counties surrounding St. Cloud and St. Louis County. I should point out that all of the populations in the metro area lives within 15 miles of one, two, or three existing facilities. Once the moratorium expires, it extends the 7-mile can't build radius around existing radiation therapy facilities to 15 miles. Members, in 2003, legislation was enacted requiring radiation therapy facilities to be built in partnership with the hospital. At that time, US Oncology had built a freestanding clinic across the street from St. John's Hospital in Maplewood, which had serious negative impacts on the hospital's bottom line. In 2007, the legislature first enacted a moratorium in reaction to the pending opening of a freestanding radiation facility right down the street from the Woodwinds Hospital. You might be wondering, why does it matter that we regulate this activity? Members, it matters because radiation therapy facilities are very expensive. If a hospital cannot operate a linear accelerator, and at least break even, who ends up footing the bill? The answer is simple, we do. Hospitals subsidize the cost of emergency rooms, mental health, and uncompensated care centers that generate profits, like cancer treatment and healthcare. When hospitals can't make ends meet, cost gets passed on, cost subsidies rises, and healthcare pricing becomes increasingly irrational. That means if you own a healthcare policy, you pay more. As part of legislation that passed last session, the Minnesota Department of Health was instructed to conduct a study on a statewide existing and projected radiation therapy facilities capacity. The opponents of the bill supported the inclusion of the study and asked that the floor vote not occur until the study results were released. The study results were released and instructed in last year's legislation on March 15th. Here we are on April 11th, and everyone has had time to review the Department of Health study. And what does the study say? It says that there are adequate capacity with the current array of accelerators and known planned construction of the following sites. One linear accelerator at Mercy Radiation Therapy Center, 4 proton therapy machines at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and a linear accelerator at the Avira Marshall Medical Center until at least 2022. In fact, by the year 2022, capacity statewide will only reach 75%, according to the Department of Health report. In the metro area, existing facilities will be at 86%. In fact, by the end, it assumes that such machines can only operate 8 hours a day. According to the report, if the facilities extend their hours by 1 hour each day, capacity would be 67% statewide and 77% in the Twin Cities by the year 2022. Now, you might hear those in opposition of this bill state that we should have waited to have any hearings on the bill until the study was released. Let's be clear about this, members. When the language was drafted last year, it required that the study study be submitted to the legislature not on December 15th in advance of the session, or January 15th at the beginning of the session, but March 15th, which ended up to be the first deadline. If we would have held a hearing on the bill after the release date of the study, we wouldn't have been able to take any action on the bill this year. Out of respect for the study process, I conveyed on the record in committee that we would not bring this bill to the floor until the study was released and we knew what it said. We now know the results of the health department study, and it's crystal clear. There will be no unmet needs given the current deployment of radiation therapy facilities until 2022. Taking into account the study's results and the continuation of the moratorium is not only warranted, but not necessary to protect hospitals and consumers of healthcare. I'm happy to stand for questions, and I'd ask for your support of this bill. Thank you, members.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. I have some misgivings about the bill. I guess a lot of misgivings. I was one of the people involved in an attempt to form a compromise last year. This is an issue, as many members know, that has been in front of the legislature for some time. And we worked very hard to craft a compromise last year between the two competing interests, I guess, in the debate about radiation oncology. And what we tried to do was create a structure that would let the current moratorium expire and move the debate about radiation onto other terms besides whether or not the legislature was going to decide who's going to win and who's going to lose in terms of being a provider of radiation services. And we had, I thought, pretty broad support for that compromise, and so it's a little disappointing to me that 1 year later that we're back to overturn that compromise, and I'm very disappointed that there are members of the legislature who were supporting that compromise who are today willing to overturn that compromise. And so the first thing I'd like to point out, Madam President and members, is there is a letter that I've distributed, has my name on it, that is a letter that was written by David Lillehog in response to a request to review this bill. And as some of you may recall, Mr. Lillehog was recently appointed to be a Supreme Court Justice by Governor Dayton. And his view is that this statute, as he quotes, or as he says on the first page, third paragraph down, is of dubious constitutionality. And he says the proposed extension of the moratorium makes it even more likely that a court would declare the statute unconstitutional. And so my point is that if we go ahead and adopt the legislation that Senator Hayden is proposing, I believe it is likely it would be challenged. And if our new Supreme Court Justice, Mr. Lillehog's opinion is worth anything, he believes that it would be on shaky grounds constitutional. And he points out why. And he talks about its violation of the Due Process Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, the fact that we're singling out oncology facilities uniquely among all the medical facilities in the state to be treated this way. Talks about, secondly, on page 2, that it conflicts with the Commerce Clause. And if you look on page 3, the talk about the idea that capacity demands that we have the moratorium, and he points out that that argument has been specifically rejected as a valid argument to restrict competition. He points out, and I'm not an attorney, but he points out and he quotes regulatory schemes that permit a state to deny an operating license on the basis that the opening of a new facility in a particular location will cause undue competition for existing facilities, that is not constitutionally permissible. And he talks about other things about the 15-mile limitation and so forth. So for whatever that's worth to members, the opinion of the new Supreme Court Justice would call into question whether or not even doing what we're contemplating doing is justifiable. But I go back again to my point that as an issue, this has been before this body a number of times. We were trying last year to try to put this issue into another context, one that would not require the legislature to be the body that decides who's going to be a winner and loser in the contest, if you will, about obtaining the ability to provide radiation services to patients, which, as we know, is a lucrative business. And so, Madam President, I would like to offer the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hahn moves to amend House File Number 164 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert. This is the A51 amendment.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. The A51 amendment, this is simply language that would repeal the repeal of the moratorium. It would, in a sense, in effect, restore the compromise language. And so I would ask for your support to adopt the amendment and reinforce or restore the compromise.
Discussion on the A51 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Hayden yield?
Senator Hayden, will you yield? Senator Hayden will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Hayden, I really didn't get a chance to look at this bill until the last few days, and we all did work hard to develop a compromise with the parties involved, and in fact, we had all virtually unanimous support. I was a strong supporter of the bill the last session. But did you seek to get compromise between the opposing sides of this, and do you have compromise like we did the last 2 years?
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President, and Senator Gazelka. I was on the healthcare committee last year, too, and so I think that in my mind, when we talked about compromise, one of the biggest pieces of the compromise was to do the study. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at a transcript from some comments that Senator Hamm made. He said if these criteria need to be adjusted as a result of the study, they may be adjusted. Said it's not to suggest that the criteria can never be changed. Obviously, the next legislature is not bound by what we may or do or say here. That was a transcript that I got that Senator Hamm said on the record. So we had the compromise. We got the study. The study says that we don't have a capacity problem until 2022, and so therefore that's why we're moving the bill forward.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Hayden yield one more time?
Senator Hayden will yield. Senator Gazelka.
So, Senator Hayden, we didn't get the same kind of cooperative compromise that we did the prior 2 years, but was there any discussion about the length of the moratorium? Why did we go all the way out to 2020? And was there conversation with all parties involved about that as well?
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President and Senator Gazelka. I'm not sure who all the parties are. There are, I think we'll see that this is a bipartisan bill and that there will be people on both sides of the aisle who will vote for and against it. But what I know is that when the report came out and said 2022, we thought that 2020 was probably going to be right. I could ask for an amendment and stretch that out if we follow the Department of Health report and go to 2022. But we know that we do live in a dynamic world, and we think 2020 is a good time to extend the moratorium. And once again, I will say, just like Senator Hand said last year, legislatures do have the right to revisit this issue. We're doing that today, and I think that if for some reason there is a total different change, if all of a sudden machines start not working properly or going down or cancer rates go up or all of the dynamic forces in healthcare, then I think we always have a time to revisit it. But for the purposes of this bill, 2020, I thought was a good time.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. And with respect to the comments of my friend, Senator Hayden, and he's right. One legislature can't bind the work of a future legislature, and we all recognize that. However, it's clear that before the study was done, the bill was introduced and was actually passed out of committee. So I think that the idea that the premise of the bill was brought about after the study was done is just clearly not true. This bill was passed out of committee before the study was completed. So we know that the idea of reinstating the moratorium was clearly the intent of the proponents of this bill before the results of the study were done. And our goal in the compromise was, yes, we wanted to do the study, but more than that, what we wanted to do was to get the legislature out of the business of picking winners and losers. And again, this is the only healthcare sector in which we do this. We don't do it for any other practice. We don't say, we're going to have hip replacements done by this practice and not by this group, or eye surgeries, or you name it. Only for this unique kind of practice. And it's, I think, not good for the legislature to be put in the position of having to make that decision. And I would also say that and I've looked at the study, And I think if you're going to make an argument for a moratorium and you look at capacity, you'd put the moratorium on the places where there's the most capacity. And instead, we put the moratorium on the places where there is the least capacity available. There's a lot of capacity in this state outside of the 14-county area, but there's no moratorium in those counties. And so you'd think that if you're concerned about the development of additional facilities in places where there is excess capacity, you'd want to put a moratorium in place where there is that excess capacity. But that's not where this is. And so my concern is that this is not really an issue about capacity. It is an issue about dividing up, I guess, a business. And that's not, in my opinion, what this legislature ought to be doing. I think we ought to be trying to push those decisions out into the marketplace to the extent that we can, understanding that we don't have a perfect marketplace. But I don't believe that putting moratoria in place is the right way to approach these problems. And so I would ask support for my amendment so that we would not have a moratorium and allow a market to function and to have these decisions get adjudicated in that way rather than here.
Senator Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. And I do have a question for Senator Hand, if he will yield.
Senator Hand, will you yield? Senator Hand will yield. Senator Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Hand, I would like to know if you could tell me, you define this as really a bill for winners and losers. I just so happen to be a member that won a permanent moratorium. You won fewer years, I won a permanent moratorium. And members, I'd like to share a story with you because I think this is important that you hear this. A few years ago when I got elected, I was invited to the Methodist Hospital to review and check how the radiation therapy unit actually works. And it was a very important visit for me because they explained to me really how the revenue from that particular unit was so important to that hospital and how important it was to maintain it. That was about 5 years ago. About 3 months ago, I had an incident with a relative that lived in Edina. She had internal bleeding, and she had to go. She came here for treatment at the Mayo Clinic and has been in treatment, and she had an emergency episode that they couldn't take her to Mayo Clinic. And so she had to go to this hospital. So I got to be with her. I went to the emergency unit, and they had to do a procedure in her esophagus, and that took about a day. And when I helped her pay the check, it was $27,000. It was a one day, one procedure, it was $27,000. Because she came to the Mayo Clinic and she has been paying that almost for every procedure, she was okay to write the check for the Methodist Hospital. But I was shocked. I just couldn't believe that a procedure in that same hospital that I was invited to attend cost $27,000. So right there at that moment when we had to write the check, I understood what would happen to this hospital if my aunt couldn't pay this bill. They will have to absorb $27,000 of a small procedure. That's what happened. And so at that moment, I thought we need the moratorium to be permanent. And that's what I would like to advocate for, members, because I believe that all of us need to have hospitals like the Methodist Hospital open to everyone. In the case of my family, she was able to write a check. But I believe that most of the people who will go through that emergency room many times will not be able to write a check for $27,000. So my question to the author is, I would like to know who are the winners and losers in this proposal.
The author of the amendment or the author of the bill? Senator Hamm.
Well, Madam President, it's my belief that with my amendment, the winners would be the public, consumers, patients, who would have the choice to decide where they wanted to have their treatments take place, and there would be more opportunities for them to make that choice. I don't know, frankly, and I don't know if there has been a clear revelation of just what is the financial relationships between providers and hospitals. I know that there are providers of radiation that reside in hospitals, but I have not yet seen any documented revelation of what that financial relationship is between the radiation providers and the hospitals specifically. So I don't know to what extent they may benefit or not from having that relationship. So my belief is that just as in every other medical practice that we have in this state, it benefits patients to have choices directed by their physicians with their physician's counsel. And radiation ought to have the same opportunity to be treated the same way as every other practice, every other procedure.
Senator Hayden.
Madam President, and I would just respectfully ask members to vote down the A51 amendment. Just plainly, the language in it would make this bill moot. I think we've outlined the issues that we've had. We've outlined the study that MDH, that Senator Hand asked to be commissioned, and its results. We know that we do have other moratoriums that this body takes a look at. In the medical field, we have a hospital moratorium that we often have to go back and talk to the legislature if we want to open another hospital for some of the very same reasons. So it's not without precedence that we would have a moratorium on very large, expensive issues that deal with the healthcare committee. So once again, members, I would ask that you vote down the amendment. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the A51 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A51 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Hayden, on House File 164, is there any more discussion on House File 164? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. Looks like I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Benson moves to amend House File Number 164 as follows. Page 2, after line 23, insert, and this is the A50 amendment.
Yeah, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. And you have heard much about, this is about controlling cost and capacity. Under our current law, hospitals are not allowed to add machines. They're allowed to move them and upgrade them. But if you happen to be an HHS geek and brought the Department of Health report to you, you'll see that under the moratorium, there's a machine being added in the moratorium area. So this really isn't a moratorium, and it's really not about cost, and it's really not about capacity. It's about setting up silos for business relationships. And so I offer this amendment in that environment so that we, as advocates and protectors of the hospitals, can make sure that the arrangements they enter into are benefiting the hospitals. The purpose of the moratorium, as stated over and over again, was to ensure that the hospitals have the revenue they need. And so all I'm asking for with this amendment is that there is transparency in the relationships regarding radiation facilities affected by the radiation moratorium. And I'll stand for questions.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I just want to be really careful here. I know that as we debate this, there is kind of a lot of chatter about people's motives and motivations and the reason for it and who wins and who loses. And I just want to be sure that my motives are pretty pure on this issue. I want to make sure that we support hospitals. I want to make sure we support our healthcare system. So I just, as we talk about this, I just want to caution us about the members' motives. And my motives, I think, are really as I stated. Madam President, I would tell the body to not vote for this, the A50 amendment. There is transparency in the process. The health department, if need be, can ask for that information. Often the relationships between the hospitals and the providers of services is very complex, and there's various different ways in which the arrangements are made, and I'm just not sure that this amendment is necessary, and I would ask members to vote it down.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. Actually, under Section 62J.17, they can only act if there's some perceived damage to the hospital. And we can't know if there's perceived damage if there's not transparency in these relationships. So if we're really interested in protecting hospitals, then let's make sure the hospitals are protected and have some transparency. And so I'd ask you for a yes vote on this amendment.
Is there any more discussion? Then all those in favor of the A50 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Are there any other amendments? Any more discussion? Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. I do have the A52 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Han moves to amend House File Number 164 as follows, page 2 after line 16, insert. And this is the A52 amendment.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, I am offering this amendment because I take it from the argument that Senator Hayden is making, and the argument is based on the capacity, and the argument is that the study that the we have sufficient capacity and we don't need additional capacity, and so therefore we need to have a moratorium to make sure that we don't get any more capacity into the system. And so what my amendment does is just clarify that and make it clear that there will not be additional capacity brought into the moratorium, the 14 county area. And so what it really says is that any facility that currently exists is not going to be permitted to do any expansion other than the replacement of an existing machine. And it does permit them to operate those machines at more hours. But what it doesn't permit is to allow an existing facility to put additional machines into those facilities. And so really what we're saying is if the argument is that we have enough capacity, we don't and shouldn't permit additional facilities to be developed, well, then let's make it clear that that's what we mean. And so this would simply clarify that language, clarify that, and make it clear that we are not going to permit that, and we will only allow the existing facilities in place to replace existing machines as they get worn out or to add additional hours of service to existing machines as they may be needed. And so I'd ask your support for the A52 amendment.
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President. And I was trying to read Senator Hayden's amendment, and I guess what he's saying is he wants to limit what machines could do. And in my opening, I think we talked a little bit about in the Department of Health that said that in the event that somehow there is a spike in the use and the need for the machines, the hospitals could go to another hour. They only looked at an 8-hour period. They could go to 9 hours in the day. They could open up at 7 instead of 8 or close at 6 instead of 5, and it would drive down the use. So I wouldn't want to handcuff the existing facilities to make that decision as they need be. We don't anticipate that to happen. And if there is maybe a technological breakthrough in which they can run the machines even better and faster and more precise, we know that we're in the age of technology that is moving awfully quick. We know that the patients are already going to those facilities, and if they can make them better and make them more efficient, or if for some reason there is a spike, there's an anomaly, we want to be able to allow the hospitals to make that decision on their own. So I would once again tell members to vote down the A52 amendment.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Hayden, I would just point out in my amendment, line 1.6, nothing in this paragraph prohibits a facility from extending the hours of use for existing machines or replacing an existing machine. So the concern that you're raising, my amendment would not impede the facility from doing what you're suggesting might be done. All I'm trying to make clear here is that if we are saying we do not want additional capacity to be brought into the 14 county area, then let's make it clear that we don't want existing capacity brought into the system. If that's what we want, then this is an amendment that will clarify that.
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Han, for pointing that out. I misread your point, but my answer still stands. I think we should vote this down. Once again, if a facility feels like we wrote that in, especially for comfort for the existing hospitals, to allow them to, if they feel like they needed another machine that they have. I do apologize. I didn't totally understand the hours and the replacing of machines, but I would still encourage members to vote the amendment down.
Is there any more discussion? Any more discussion on the A52 amendment? Then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Are there any other amendments? Seeing no further amendments, the Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I don't have an amendment. It was discussion.
Okay, so why don't we give the bill its third reading?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 164, a bill for an act relating to health, changing provisions for radiation therapy facility construction.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. In the area that I represent, up in Plymouth, there's been just a tremendous new facility that has been created at the West Health site. It's a new emergency room facility, as well as there's going to be an additional breast cancer site. And for anyone on the Health and Human Services Committee, I strongly encourage you to take a tour of this facility. It is really just state-of-the-art in every way and is going to fulfill a tremendous need in the northwest part of the metro area and in the overall West Metro. And then there's another area in my community that's in Senator Hand's district, I believe, which is the Abbott Northwestern General Medicine facility that's on 169, that place where 169 and 494 comes together, which is also just top-notch, state-of-the-art, wonderful facility. I actually ended up switching physicians because I wanted to be able to access the new facility there, and so my doctor wasn't in that group, and I literally switched physicians because I wanted to have access to that. And I don't think that either of those facilities are at yet ready yet for saying that they would like to add radiation. I expect that, and know firsthand that Plymouth is considering that because of it's a Piper Breast Center. And so, of course, you know, there's with a trend going in medicine towards integrative care, we'll see more and more of these places where they service a cancer patient that they'll want to do integrative care. And so you know, because of that, I had let Senator Hayden know, but just wanted to make sure my community knew that I was hearing from them, and so I wouldn't be able to support this.
Is there any Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this bill, have been in support of this bill for a very long time. We seem to be working on this for a long time, and I think it was very fair to have the study done last year. I'd like to thank Senator Hayden for his leadership on this, and Senator Fischbach, who has worked on it in the past biennium, and they did a very good job. And the study, as you all know, members, has shown that we will not have a capacity issue. But, you know, we have to be very concerned about the hospitals. And so that's why I'm so glad that the past amendment, the A52 amendment, Senator Hand's amendment, did not limit the hospitals, because changes are coming, members, to our hospitals, whether we like it or not. And it started with the Affordable Care Act, and it's going down to, as you have possibly seen, the House HHS bill that has been proposed. It's got a surcharge on our hospitals. There are many things that will affect the bottom line of our hospitals, and I think this bill actually will help them to create a fair market out there, because the playing field is not level. And I think if we pass this, we will give our hospitals that have these radiation therapy units in place the ability to make sure that the care is given in a fair and economical way.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President, and I would like to say thank you to Senator Hayden as well. He's been very respectful, much as we might tussle back and forth. I appreciate his openness in discussions. And with respect to the hospitals, absolutely, our hospitals are going to need a lot of help and support. But then we need to ask ourselves, is the environment for the radiation facilities a competitive environment so they're getting the best deal? We don't know that. We don't know who is getting involved in these deals, and we don't know if they're open to competition. Also, why don't any other states have this moratorium? No other states have this, members. Why is Minnesota standing out in this way? And why just radiation centers, not outpatient surgeries, which are also a great source of revenue for hospitals? Why not other diagnostic imaging, also expensive upfront cost and a good source of revenue for hospitals to subsidize the mental health services they provide, subsidize their EDs, subsidize their chapels? Why no moratorium on outpatient surgeries and diagnostic imaging? Why? The more I dug into this, the less comfortable I got with it. The more I sat down with the economists at the Department of Health, I realized there's a lot we don't know, members, and this bill doesn't make it clearer, and it doesn't make it easier for us to make decisions. In the short term, I think it will help the hospitals, but in the long term, this is a bad precedent for how we're going to manage healthcare in Minnesota, and I would ask for a no vote on this bill.
Senator Sharon.
And thank you very much, Madam President. I would also like to thank Senator Hahn, who is, and I know because I was in his office last year, was it last year, Senator, talking about the issue, the interests that wanted to be able to compete in this industry, and your desire to create and mediate between the two interested groups. So that was a sincere effort on his part. And as a result of the legislation, did this study. And this study has demonstrated what some of the people were saying in front of the committee, that the need is being met under the current in the current system. And that's valuable and important information for us to have. So I want to thank you for that. And we have struggled with this on at two levels. You know, the perspective of that I think that you brought to this was to take a look at this fairness and who can compete for the business. And that was sincere and was the motivation, I think, although I guess I'm not supposed to speak to that. But I think that you clearly were looking through that lens. Maybe that's the way I should articulate that. But I looked through it through a different lens. And I served on a hospital board, Mayo Health System Hospital Board in southern Minnesota, have struggled with all of these changes in which, for example, the surgery centers that were referred to by Senator Benson were developed in our part of the state that moved surgery outside of the surgical suites in the hospitals. You know, but the idea and the promise that somehow these competitive processes in the healthcare system would drive down costs. But it didn't drive down costs, and it doesn't drive down costs in healthcare. And in fact, it created a crisis for the hospital that operates on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis to be able to continue to support our access to a service like that when others are bleeding off or taking off those kind of profit centers that can be done 9 to 5. And so I have been involved in the process that if I could roll back some of the decisions that we've made that have and have the conversation more thoroughly about how do market forces or when we approach healthcare industry and the provision of healthcare with market principles, what does it really create the same kind of cost savings that we would when we have other kinds of products that we sell? And I think we deserve to have a plentiful conversation and an analysis of whether or not those principles applied in this situation work. So I do want to express appreciation, though, for the effort. You know, the other thing I would like to say to those listening, that this study that was done had a due date that was late in the session. So it made it difficult that if you wanted to create legislation in reaction to this after the report, that it would, you couldn't do it in this legislative session. So, you know, I was persuaded in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee to hear the bill, and but the committee was really very clear with Senator Hayden that that we wanted to make certain that the outcome of the study from the earlier legislation was in our hands, so that we were assured that the information that was being given to us in testimony was in fact accurate, and it is, about that there's an adequate supply of these facilities for people. And the conclusion I draw from that is that if you increase it, everybody has to raise their costs to pay for these expensive resources, and it ends up driving the cost of health care up for everybody. So I just wanted to add that and say a special thanks, because I know that there's disappointment in the change of the language, but there was a great deal in that legislation I think has been beneficial to us in the Senate.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I've been perplexed in the last 24 hours. I've changed my mind. I've heard some things that I've not heard before. I feel like it's somewhat been hard, because you've got free market that you want to encourage, and then on the other side you say, well, the hospitals aren't really free markets, so we really need to help them, and our hospitals are important, and they're certainly important to me and the staff that's there. I'll tell you what was a tipping point, really, was the last amendment. The study said that we're taking care of our needs now, if I understand it correctly. And the last amendment, A52, said all we're doing is saying you can't build new ones and add on. You can, as I understand it, replace and expand the time. And if we've got no need, then why wouldn't you go for this if there was a little expansion? So that was a turning point for me. So I would encourage members, if you're like me, that have stood for this moratorium for the last couple of years, I feel like there's something wrong here, and it doesn't feel good to me. And so I'm going to go with my gut and vote against this.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to thank kind words from my friend Senator Sharon, and I also want to thank my friend Senator Hayden. And I know that we don't all agree on this issue, and I know Senator Fischbach, Senator Rose, and others who are my friends, and we may not share exactly the same perspective on this issue, which to me is a good reason why we shouldn't have this issue. There are a lot of issues that we don't agree on that we should have in a legislative body. This isn't one of them. This is the kind of issue that ought to be adjudicated in a marketplace, not in a legislative chamber, because what it forces us to do is to decide between this person or that person or this entity and that entity and decide which one wins, because that's really what this is. There are hospitals, the law says right now you can't operate radiation facilities outside of a partnership with a hospital, and nobody has suggested that we change that. Nobody. And so whether we adopt this bill or we don't adopt it, that would always be the case, that anybody who's thinking about operating radiation services would have to be in partnership with a hospital. And I will not say that there's anyone that doesn't believe any more than I do the importance of our hospitals and how important it is that we keep them strong. And I agree with Senator Rosen. We're in a time of change, and hospitals are the future of hospitals, and what's going to happen under the federal law and other things. A lot of uncertainty, and we're going to have a lot of challenges that we're going to face. But I also think about patients, and I also think about how important it is that we make sure that we do everything we can to put decision-making about care and treatment in the hands of patients and physicians, and do everything we can to not artificially limit choices by things we do here. And we had a debate a few weeks ago about the healthcare exchange, and we talked about insurance. We talked about how, well, we may want to not allow all the choices to be available to people. We want to have a few choices, the best choices. And that kind of decision that we make, where we say we don't want all choices to be available, we want to limit choices, those are the things that legislatures do. We decide, we limit, we make things We have to. That's what we do. I think it's risky to do that in something like this. We ought to be trying to figure out how, with this difficult problem, to create the conditions to allow this to be adjudicated outside of the legislature. We took a run at that last year. I acknowledge then, I acknowledge today, it was not perfect. It was not a perfect solution. There were things about it that I didn't like. I know there are things about it that Senator Fischbach didn't like and others didn't like. Was not perfect. What I hope for, frankly, is it would not be in full effect for another year or two, and that would maybe give us some time to think about it, and maybe we could find some better ways to do things. But frankly, I didn't envision that the response would be, let's go back and re-implement the moratorium. Unfortunately, I think that's what we're about to do. I think it's a step backward. I hope that at some future date, the legislature will consider thinking again about how we can take this issue and put it in a different context than what we have today. So, members, I'm going to vote against the bill. I would urge your vote no as well.
Madam President.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I was the author of the bill last year, and an important part of that bill was the study. And now that we have the information, we should be reacting to what we found out. We do studies so that we are able to gain information. So now that we have that information, we should react. And Senator Hayden's bill does react to that information and deals with the excess, the capacity issues. And that is why I am supporting this and was part of the negotiations last year. But like I said, the study information that we have gotten is important, and we should be reacting, and I'm supporting Senator Hayden's bill and urge a yes.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam President. I think we've had a really good discussion about this. I do want to thank the members of the body, in particular Senator Hahn and Senator Benson and others on the health care committees of last year and this year to really kind of think about what we need to do. I think that the Department of Health study, which we did wait to hear from before we had this meeting today, this session today, really affirmed that there is existing capacity. We have explained, and quite eloquently, Senator Sharon and others, what that means for the taxpayer, what that means for consumers of health care, what that means for patients. And it means that we have a good quality health care system, our good quality product that is going to provide really good radiation therapy for those that unfortunately are going to need it. And so with that being said, members, I just wanted to say thank you. I think we did this in the best possible way that we could, but we needed to ensure that this bill was going to be, we wanted to make sure that if this bill was going to be heard this year, that we had to get it through the process, and I think we addressed that. We've been patiently waiting from the Department of Health. We heard from them. We know what it says, and now I would ask you for support for the bill. Thank you so much.
The Secretary will take the roll on House File 164. Senators having voted, there are 50. The secretary will close the roll. There are 52 in favor, 13 opposed. The motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions will revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. The secretary will read the committee report.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate file number 1589, a bill for an act relating to the operation of state government finance, allowing the Secretary of State authority to accept funds from local government units. Reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee report read by the Secretary be adopted.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. We move then to the sixth order of business. Second reading of Senate File 1589 will be given its second reading. We move now to announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Senator Cohen.
Madam President, with the confusion over weather and all the rest of it, just to make sure people understand, Finance Committee will meet at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Are there any other announcements? Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, the Judiciary Committee will convene immediately following adjournment of session. We will go until 2 p.m., and we have a large agenda. I don't think we'll finish, so we will plan on reconvening at 6 o'clock.
Senator Weaker.
Thank you, Madam President. The E-12 Budget Division will continue meeting in room 112 at 2:15 p.m.
Without objection, the following
Madam
Senator.
President.
Senator Tomasoni.
Is there a glare back here and you can't see me standing up? Or what? I'm just curious.
Anyway,
Madam President.
Senator Tomasoni, the light is reflecting off your head and blinding me.
That's what I was worried about. That's why I
Senator
asked.
Senator Tomasoni.
You know, it could be a halo, you know. It might not be a reflection. But, Madam President, the Environment, Economic Development, and the Agricultural Division will meet at 1 o'clock.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Reinert, Sieben, Alday, Senator Nelson and Senjum from 11:45 to 12 noon, Senator Limmer from 11:45 to 12:10, Senator Schmidt from 11 to 12 noon. Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, for planning purposes for next week, we're going to start taking up the omnibus finance bills. I expect it's going to be a pretty busy week. So from a scheduling standpoint, you might want to let your offices know that there's going to probably be a great deal of time on the floor next week so that we don't get too many conflicts with what would otherwise be appointments. The House, I believe, has publicly announced already that they plan to meet on Saturday, April 20th. So at least tentatively, we should plan on meeting that day also. So please try to adjust your calendar so that you're going to be available to do that. If we do that, we would hope to come in relatively early in the morning and try to get done for rural members that want to be able to get home, allow them to be able to get home before it got dark. So probably plan on starting earlier in the morning on Saturday, April 20th, tentatively. Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Monday, April 15th, 11 a.m.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.